purpose the system were there, so I can basically talk about whatever I want, and that would be still okay. But the idea is to get a little bit of an overview of how do we try to look at the vasculature in a slightly new way. And it's really taking a large-scale approach to the organization of the cortical vasculature. So just to give you, this is our lab right now. And basically, I don't need a picture because Andy's here and Phil is here. So most of the work that you will see today that I will be showing is done together with Andy and Phil. So, but anyway, it's done with, just to put things into the, you know, right frame of mind, I go back to, you know, this famous paper where if you think about how to distribute a resource in a given network, this is the basic sort of topology that you get. You just need a branching tree, right? But interestingly, if you for a moment start to add to the same sort of network a little bit of constraints, you start breaking randomly, you know, some of these portions of the network, or you change where your sink is, all of a sudden you change from being a tree into being something which is much more closer to much more loopy structure. I will even call it a honeybee kind of structure. And so the main question is, thank you, Arnaud, for this very interesting question. So you run basically a simulation where you ask what is the best way to reach every location in the network, and you let it decide where to put the larger branches and how to actually branch itself, right? But you can do this under no, you know, conditions, I mean, under no constraints, and you get something that looks very much like a tree, okay? Now, if you start randomly breaking some of the connections and you still try to optimize for arriving to every possible location, you start to get less and less a tree. And I mean, this projector is really not good, but these things are almost interconnected, okay? And if you change the location of your sink, so you start from here, source goes from here, and you want to get to different points, right? So if you start changing the location of that point randomly, the simulation outcome is such that you no longer can have a tree, but something that's much more distributed and interconnected. Okay, but you know, real vasculature does not look like that. And what you see here is a chunk of our data sets nicely rendered by Phil here, where you can already see three distinct types of sort of topologies. And I will devote some time to each one of them. So on the very surface, we have sort of a highway which brings blood into the brain. Then we have sort of off-ramps. These are these penetrating arteries that dive into the cortex. And then we go to the subsurface microvasculature, which is either a gated community or a big city with a lot of connections. We still need to, this is one of the main things that we want to know, whether we have domains there or there's just a continuum there. And we'll get to that question later. But just for the sake of the people, I think I can skip this slide, right? I mean, we lost the therapies here, so. Oh, sorry, okay. So how does brain get to the, how does, you know, blood get to the brain, right? So this is basically coming from, you know, heart, right? And looking at the brain from underneath, there is something that is called the circle of Willis. So there you have the branching of the major input into the brain and goes into the middle cerebral artery here, and I will show you where it goes afterwards. And you have the anterior cerebral artery, and you also have the posterior cerebral artery. Now, let's look now coming again into the surface of the brain. You see that there is the largest territory is irrigated by the middle cerebral artery. But nevertheless, there are other areas that are irrigated by the posterior cerebral artery as well as the anterior one. Important is to mention that these do not just end, they do connect in a series of anastomoses. But this is the picture that you will find in most textbooks, and it also dominates the literature when it comes to the what is the structure of the middle cerebral artery. So for us, it didn't really make sense because evidence from our lab and some evidence in the literature, we see many more anastomoses, interconnections between the branches of the MCA. So there's only one way to really be able to tell that in detail is to take a brute force approach, perfuse an animal where you have all the vasculature label, take the cortex, flattening it out, and basically have an undergrad going through every single portion of the vasculature and labeling it. So we, two undergrads, yeah, and then myself too. So, but again, the idea here is we do it once and we do it right. So we definitely map it every single branch point on top of the surface and every single penetrating artery as well. And every time that we have any, you know, questions about whether two things are branching or not, we go back to a high magnification and we scan up and down so we can basically tell whether things are connected or not. And the idea is to translate anatomy into a graph structure that we can analyze in terms of, you know, the topology. Okay? So the first thing that we notice is that you can divide this network into a backbone, and then you can look at the branchings out of the backbone into the actual parenchyma. So the first thing that we notice, again, is when you look only at the backbone, the salient feature here is the presence of loops, anastomosis. Again, this is not what you will find either in the, you know, before our paper. You won't find this in the literature, neither in textbooks. And we went on and characterized the actual, you know, scaling properties. And first thing, you can definitely see that it scales closely to a honeycomb, which is a regular structure, you know, that you can made out of hexagons. It definitely does not look like a binary tree. Okay. Now, certainly, there's no simple symmetric regular lattice that will capture all the complexity of this network, because the size of these loops that you can see here, you know, ranges between 3, 4, and 5. And of course, we have a tail, we have longer ones. So again, this is sort of a honeycomb, but with more structure to it. Then the real question here then became whether the surface network can distribute blood concomitant with focal neuronal activation. And since we have seen this already presented yesterday, the only thing that I would like to mention here is that there is an area that is activated and the blood is reallocated to a relatively large area. This is about like a 1.5 millimeter where you have a differential response in the vasculature. So the next question is whether this redundancy really provides any type of protection to the blood flow supply. And the first thing that one can do is to go to, you know, sit in front of the computer and run a percolation sort of experiment where you basically delete one after the other segments and you ask at what point, how much do I need to remove from this network before it really breaks into more than one element, meaning that an area will be completely disconnected, that we have no blood flow. So it is pretty, we can remove up to, you know, 15% and still have a fully connected network. Of course, we are far away from ideal kind of lattices where you could be probably removing up to 25 or 30% before we have like half of the network being disconnected. Or you can do something different, which is to really go and perform the same experiment in vivo, where we can, and I will leave more of the details to Andy to sort of like cover, but we can target, and this is previous work done in the lab before Andy and myself arrived, but you can definitely see that we can, again, this is difficult to see here, but we can create a blockation, an obstruction of the flow here, and counterintuitive to what one might think, there is reorganization of the flow directions, so you still get flow coming back to the same areas. So this is only possible because of the presence of this specific topology. So the next question will be, what is really the topology of the penetrating arterioles? And as I said before, the common idea is that these are like binary trees that go and branch and dive into the parenchyma. So when we first look at these branching portions of the vasculature, the most salient feature is that they are not very much branching. About 80% of these offshoots from the middle cerebral artery, they either penetrate directly underneath the middle cerebral artery or just branch and immediately dive into the parenchyma. And the remaining is decreasing very fast. So we don't see a lot of very elaborated binary trees. And probably this is an underestimation, since here on the borders where we have the larger trees, we also have anastomosis with the ACA and the PCA. So this would become part of another loop, meaning that the vast majority of these penetrating arteries will all of a sudden be part of just another loop. So we learned that penetrating arterioles primarily originate from the from non-branching stuffs of the surface network, and that raises another question: whether this surface network can really protect flow specifically to the penetrating arteries. So again, we roll back to doing this in vivo experiment with Andy, and again we leave more room for Andy to talk about them. But basically, we can even target nearby a penetrating artery, and you see a striking difference. When we occlude a surface artery, there's almost no damage underneath the cortex. But when you occlude directly a penetrating artery, there's a cylinder of death of several hundred microns underneath the occlusion area, where there is cell and neuronal death over there. So clearly, these loops really protect the flow into the parenchyma. So to put really everything into sort of like one scale, we can see that these loops are slightly smaller than the area that is activated by a sensory input. The good news are that the gray area here, which is the size of a cyst, is smaller than the area that gets activated here. There is still an open question whether this type of damage really can affect behavior, and Andy might talk about that soon. So let me just, really, this is time to switch gears and start to look at what is the relationship between the microvasculature and the neurons on all cells in the parenchyma. We took a slightly different approach here, where we cut thick sections ranging between 400 to 700 microns, and we index match them, meaning that we make them transparent so we can see deeper into the tissue without really the need to remove portions of the tissue, which I will refer to that. So Phil, sitting here, put a lot of effort into going from grayscale data, which comes from the microscope, and what you're seeing here are basically hundreds of little cubes. Each one of these is 400 microns in depth and 200 microns along the side, where you can see we collect the vasculature, we collect all the cells in the same volume, and we can label all neurons there using neuron. I won't get into the details of going from grayscale data into what we call a vectorized representation, meaning that we know exactly the position of each one of the cell soma in these volumes, as well as we get a representation of what might be the skeleton of each one of the vessels there. And already at this level, we can learn that, you know, for example, the distributions of neurons is slightly farther away from from a null model, meaning that they do not cluster nearby microvasculature. So relating to what Bruno has also tested in monkeys, right? It was reference monkeys. We do not see a very strong correlation at the single column level when it comes to look at the cellular density and the vascular density. But it has to be said that when we look across entire sections of a coronal, coronal slab, we do see, and across animals as well, we do see a positive correlation between the fraction occupied by the vasculature and the number of neurons. So going back to our iconic sort of picture, we now can start to look at, yes, very fast. Sorry, just stop me. It's 20 minutes. OK, so again, I will go slowly here. But now, if we really want to, let me just spend a moment telling you how we do actually collect this kind of large-scale volumes. And the idea is we do two photon to obtain a regular volume, say, because this is on fixed tissue, we can only go up to 150 or 200 microns. But for the to be on the safe side, we only look at 120, 150 microns. And what we do, we use a second laser. And this is, again, a technique pioneered by Field, where we remove a portion of the tissue that we has already been imaged. And by doing this time after time after time, we are able to process eventually an unlimited amount of tissue. So there is no limit to how large we could probably go and how deep we can image using this technique. This laser took a lot of time to align, and we finally have switched to a turnkey system, so experiments are running faster. Anyway, the outcome, what you get from this sort of imaging procedure is a bunch of different blocks with some overlap, and we took, again, a lot of time to put everything back together, make sure that things are properly connected with no gaps, and I will skip the...
You were aligning the different sets of tissue.
Yes.
So how many sets
did you have to align? So we collect on a regular day, we collect about between 1,000 and 2,000 of these little blocks, and we need to put them all back together. Okay, so, yes. Oh, so, yeah, maybe I should erase it. So, if you try to get to, so there is the challenge here is that if you look at the interface between two blocks and you say they want to be separated by a given amount, and then you go to the next interface, and that interface wants to be pulled into another direction, and then you go to the next one, and to the next one, and so on and so forth. If you try to either propagate these offsets, or to, you know, regardless how you propagate this offset, try to sort of like set every block at its position, you end up having a volume that is very, it's not properly stitched. You propagate errors that way. So what this means is that we can solve, you can think about this as a n-dimensional system where each interface defines a given two-dimensional energy function, and then you solve that system sort of like not maximizing, but you optimize that. So you minimize the energy space.
So you're talking about 2,000 blocks.
Yes.
But this means you're looking then at the human brain,
or also the mouse system. Looking at an entire mouse brain would be already challenging. Oh, I didn't. I think that I mentioned this. Each one of these blocks,
yeah.
It's 256 by 256, but say 150. But the final volumes that we are right now collecting, Michael, sorry. The final. This is basically the type, the size of the volumes that we are working with, which are basically around 1.5. Now we are moving up to 2 millimeters on each side. I mean. Yeah. There's. No, for this, this is. No, I should have mentioned this. This is with unclear tissue. Yeah. Okay. So, one of the things that we can start doing once you have. Oh, this is terrible here. Sorry for the colors is not coming really good, but we can start trying to understand how flow is distributed in these large scale networks. Similar to the work that Bruno has done here, I mean previously done, so we can start to look at patterns of flow, how things are, you know, in terms of resistance and again, we can. This is really preliminary, so I will not go into too much detail here. But we can go back and start asking questions about the topological organization at this level. And if you remember from a few slides ago, we can look at the size of these loops. And interestingly, what we find when comparing to the surface where we had about around a size of four segments that you need to cross to get back to the same point, when we go deep into the vasculature, the microvasculature has loops, but these loops tend to be much longer. This is actually sitting pretty nicely with previously taking data about the effect of blocking a microvascular segment underneath. What you can see here is if you do the same blockage as we did on the surface, but underneath the cortex, what we're having is that flow is reduced to a large scale, even when you go up to 4 or even longer, it's not shown here, branches downstream. If you remember again from the cortex, when we do this same occlusion on the pia, immediately you have a rearrangement and flow gets back even to the same place. Now, what I would like to move, and basically it will be the last portion of the talk, is really to ask whether, actually, how does the vasculature organize, or is it organized into discrete elements as the neuronal units are? And this is the key question that we want to answer at the system level, if I might say. And in order to do so, our data set, as I mentioned, do have the information about the location. This is looking at, again, on top of the somatosensory cortex, and we can identify exactly where each one of these neuronal units are located and ask whether the vascular units, if they organize into these that's on all optical histology. That's the method that we use. So the first thing that we notice here is that there is not a one-to-one link already at the level of the penetrating arteries. So a one-to-one relationship would mean that, like in this case, you can see here, where a penetrating artery will be devoted to a single neuronal unit. There are cases, with the vast majority, this ribbon is what I showed before, sorry. Imagine that now I go there and delineate the location of each one of these units. This is right now done by hand, but you could think about some sort of spatial filtering that would highlight these boundaries. In the mouse, the septa is very, very, very thin. And you see how close these different barrels are. You can see the septa, I won't say no. Yeah, but that's where they do meet, that's what I was saying. But this is, in the mouse, again, these are pretty thin septa. Little squares, David. Sorry? Yeah. I agree, but again, you might be used to see the pictures from the rat barrel cortex where the units are much separated away and the septa are thicker, but we can still see them. Okay, so these ribbons represent the location of these units in this specific data set. And again, I was saying that for a lot of cases, you can have a situation where this a single penetrating artery might be feeding two different units. So in order to be able to answer this question, whether there exists a way to naturally partition these networks and find a matching to the neuronal units, and again, here, these ribbons are from another data set, but again, we do the same process. We look at the location of neurons, and based on that, we can trace by hand where the neuronal units are at layer 4. So what I did here is to look at the microvascular network of layer 4, and I tried a vast set of sort of like graph theory tools to partition this network. And surprisingly, there's almost no way to break it down into smaller subnetworks. It's fully connected, there's one large component, and even in this large component, things look pretty much as they are. Sort of like a regular mesh. It's a very complicated mesh in 3D, but it seems to be regular.
But you have that many internal loops, so this is not a real-life component.
Well, this is layer 4. So the loops here, as I mentioned before, have a longer length. You need to go through more branches before you come back to the same location. They are longer, but yes, well, to be even more precise, what I did here, I'm only looking at the microvasculature. So I can remove the penetrating arteries.
Yeah, I'm not talking about, I'm just talking about pre-capillary loops.
Okay.
He was referring to them as the most, in the classical sense, would be of course pre-capillary loops.
That would be pre-capillary, yes.
On this mesh here, we cannot actually say whether it's pre-capillary or capillary stressor.
Well, okay, let me just say that the next analysis that I would like to show here, this is a partitioning of the network that took into account the actual size of these of each segment. So every single analysis that you do, well, I shouldn't say every, but the vast majority of topological analysis that you can do on a, you know, removing this notion of the different sizes, what is precapillary as opposed to capillary, you can also do taking into account the radii of each one of these elements. And again, what I'm showing here is one type of clustering analysis, which we can definitely see that leads to a sort of weak partitioning of the connectivity matrix. This matrix is showing who's connected to who. It's sort of like, you know, it's a guide to go and say which one of these elements are sort of like more interconnected. And when it comes to look at, for example, this specific barrel that I'm pointing to right now, there are at least three or more clusters of these microvasculature elements that will actually cross a single neuronal unit in this case. So again, it's difficult to find a matching between neuronal and vascular units, strongly pointing to the idea that there are no such units, at least at layer 4, the microvasculature level. So just to summarize, I think that important to take home message is the notion of redundancy. This is a key silent feature of the vasculature at any level that we're looking at. There are certainly elements along the vasculature which render it fragile, which are the penetrating vessels. These are the bottlenecks of the vasculature, and there is no redundancy there. If you block a penetrating artery, that will create damage. So far, Andy will talk about a little bit more about what is the size of the different occlusions that you can have and whether they have an effect or not. And I would just like to finish by showing directions of where we're gearing up to do next in terms of mapping the different elements of the neurovascular units. And what I'm showing here, for example, is the location of smooth muscle actin cells. Again, looking only at the PL level right now, but you can definitely see this sort of like patchy circular organization around PL elements of the vasculature. And going back to the notion of understanding what is the extent of the projection of different interneurons into the vasculature, how the volume is parcelated by the different interneurons is down our list of to-do things. I would like again to thank you for your attention, and this is again the lab report.